Hello all and welcome back. Just in front of me here, I'm so glad the camera won't pan over here. Boxes, stuff getting packed up, down to 10 days away to move into the new place. So it's a bit of a building site and a packing area at the moment. So I'm glad that this all looks serene here. Thank you so much everyone for watching, continuing to be active in this weekly podcast. I hugely appreciate it. Please do continue to share your thoughts and opinions. Best place to do so, comment section below. And if you have a longer story, maybe with some pictures, you can email hiatuesday@dobbs.com. And if you're willing to, do subscribe to the channel. It's massively appreciated. Let's begin this week. Harley Davidson, new CEO. This is a huge step because Jochen Zeitz, the current German CEO, he stepped down now at Harley Davidson. And I think you'd probably have to give it an analysis of his tenure over half a decade as a disaster. Unfortunately, it hasn't worked out on any level. And within Harley Davidson, whether it be the powers that be there or people feeding down within the Harley Davidson family, they've been desperate for Jochen Zeitz to go for quite a long time now. There was just no good end in sight. So they've got a brand new CEO, Harley Davidson. They've just announced him, and I found this article fascinating. So the new CEO of Harley Davidson, Arthur Stars, I'm reading here from the eu.jsonline.com. Arthur Starr's proven track record of financial growth. He has led Topgolf, the golfing company. Their revenue increased to over 50% during his tenure. He's also held leadership positions at Pizza Hut, where he expanded their global presence to over 18,000 locations. This is the bit I found especially interesting. Take a listen to this because this really tells you a lot about the gentleman taking over as CEO. This is him quoting here, or this is his statement. I'm excited by the tremendous potential to both drive growth and further enhance the Harley-Davidson experience for all. And I look forward to working with the dedicated Harley-Davidson employees and dealer network as we start this journey together, Stars says. Stars received a bachelor's degree in economics from Princeton University in 1998. He's on the board of the Greater Dallas Youth Orchestra, the Tartan Board, at Texas Scottish Rite Hospital, the First Tee of Dallas, Big Thought, the Creator's Council, and First Book, a Washington, D.C.-based nonprofit whose mission is to provide equal access to quality education for kids in needs. And a little bit more about his personal life. He's an avid sports and outdoor enthusiast who enjoys hiking, playing golf, no surprise there, listening to live music, and spending time with family. He's clearly a very clever gentleman with a really good proven career history. But the problem is for me, after Jochen Zeitz, he was culturally completely wrong for Harley Davidson. He didn't understand the essence of what a Harley Davidson buyer is. He also didn't understand the essence of where Harley Davidson had to be pushed to get them to the right place, to change their image as a brand to something for the 2020s and beyond. He just didn't get that at all. And that was a huge problem. And Jochen Zeitz, of course, had a great career before Harley Davidson, transforming Puma. So just because this new gentleman has a stellar career history, that doesn't matter if he doesn't understand the intricacies and the passion involved around Harley Davidson. He's clearly not a biker at heart because nothing here mentions he has even a passing interest in motorcycles. He likes hiking and golf, which is brilliant. But after the Jochen Zeitz episode, maybe I don't understand enough about business. Maybe it doesn't matter if the CEO of Harley Davidson has any interest in motorcycles at all. But I think now, after the failure of Jochen Zeitz, Harley Davidson needs to go in a completely different direction. They need to focus on bringing someone in who's going to steer the ship, who's got a genuine passion and understanding of what Harley Davidson is and about the direction they need to push in, because there were so many things that Jochen Zeitz did that were so badly wrong that any Harley-Davidson enthusiast would understand. That I don't know if this is the right direction to go in. So here we go. Harley-Davidson have a new CEO. If things go over the next 5 years, as badly as they've gone over the 5 years that have been, it's impossible to say how much trouble Harley-Davidson are in, because it's almost too depressing to think about. So I hope he's the right person, but just bringing someone in who's got no background or enthusiasm in biking in general, I'm unsure. It's not the appointment that really, really excites me, but let's see what happens with that. So there you go, Harley-Davidson new CEO. Moving on to something, I'm saying more positive, maybe that is positive from Harley. 26,000 miles on a Honda Africa Twin. I've loved following along with this journey. This is from Henry. Freddie, here's a final map of our trip. Total distance, 26,000 miles. What's that, about 40,000 kilometers? 16 countries, two hemispheres, from Alaska all the way to Argentina over a 10-month period. I would say we camped for at least 60 to 70% of the trip, and these were the best of times. You don't remember a hotel. We plan to return to explore Patagonia in the next few years with Nicola on her own bike this time, because this one they were two up on a Honda Africa Twin. Next time, two separate bikes. We intend to take smaller adventure bikes for more off-road riding into the wilderness. Henry, and you can follow them at Two Up to Somewhere. The most fascinating thing for me, Henry, is your decision after doing a gigantic amount of mileage through America. Your decision for the next one to go more lightweight. You know, Itchy Boots always favours lightweight motorcycles. And for you both to now want to almost go, I say go backwards, only in terms of size and power, go backwards from a big 1,000cc plus adventure bike to something much smaller and more manageable, because you want to go on the off-road tracks. Fascinating. And what a fantastic trip. Memories that will last a lifetime. Thank you for sharing that. Now, issues with the smaller brand 125 to 250cc motorbikes. The likes of Mutt Motorcycles, which unfortunately have now gone bust and are no more. Then you've got Held Motorcycles and you've got Bullet Motorcycles. These are brands that make the coolest looking 125cc bikes. Nothing looks better than these. But do you get the reliability? Do you get the dealer support that you need for a purchasing decision? I've seen a few comments like this and I wanted to read this one out. This is from Paul. My son had a Bullet Hero. That's basically the same bike as the Maverick and probably built in the exact same factory. This bike didn't even last 1 year. Loads of wiring issues and other problems. It would run horribly. The dealer couldn't even sort it out, and my son spent over £1,000 with another garage because the main dealer couldn't sort it out. Spent another £1,000 with another garage, still to no avail. He was so disgusted, he told the garage to just keep the bike, and he never wanted to see it again. He's had since two Yamaha XSR 250s or XSR 125s, and now he couldn't be happier. The only reason he's had two of them, the first one was written off. It's so up and down and iffy, the reviews and the reliability of these Chinese-built 125s specifically. Bullet Motorcycles, for example, they've recently rebranded over the past 4 years, I think, and they're now called Blue Rock. That's a Belgian brand. And if you look at the Herald Maverick, as Paul was saying, put it side by side, Herald Maverick, next to the Blue Rock, you can see, just as Paul has indicated, I think these are pretty much the exact same bike, just rebranded. And the build quality issues, I remember Mutt Motorcycles, unfortunately, I used to get a few people saying, look, some people said, look, they're great little bikes that look amazing. And others would say, look, the wiring issues were just chronic and ruined the ownership experience of these bikes. So if you do want a safe bet, you go for the likes of a Yamaha XSR. The problem with the Yamaha XSR, they are so good, and everyone wants one. They hold their value ridiculously well. So then you're paying, even for a secondhand one, £3,000 for a 125cc bike that you may only want to have for 8 months while you pass your test, knowing that you want to move on to a bigger bike. And £3,000 to put into a bike is a lot of money if you know you want to get rid of it in 8 to 10 months. It's a really tricky one. They build excellent looking bikes, these Chinese built bikes with European headquarters, but the reliability, it is iffy at best. Now, Canarian dreaming. I always love when I get stuff, road trips in the Canaries. For anyone non-European, the Canary Islands, that little Spanish selection of islands just off the west coast of Africa. This is from Nico and Lara. Freddie, my wife and I have been going to the little Spanish island of La Palma for our vacations for the last 7 years. We absolutely love the Canary Islands, but we'd never been to Tenerife until 2023. Now, we absolutely love it. I then went on a solo biking holiday to Tenerife in February. First, I rented a Royal Enfield from Easy Rider. Then I booked 2 tours with Adam from Tenerife on Triumph. First day on the Triumph Speed Twin 900 and the second on the Triumph T120 Bonneville. The Speed 900 and the Royal Enfield, they're great bikes, no question about it. But I fell in love with the T120. After two of the best days of my life with Adam, Danny, Jan and Leslie, they were two other customers at the time, I flew back to Germany, scraped together my savings and bought a Triumph T120. I've already done a big trip across the whole country, all the way up to the North Sea. I live way down south and my next trip is already in the planning stages. My life's changed, and for the better, since motorcycles and since holidays to Tenerife. Nico and Lara. Nico and Lara, I remember so well almost every single ride I did in Tenerife. That island is riding heaven. And there's one road going up the volcano, Teide, where you go through the cloud line. So you're riding along and you can just see a bed of clouds. Ride up into the clouds and you actually get through. And the second you get through the cloud line and it's bright blue sky above you and below is just a white blanket of cloud, it's the most magical experience. I'm going to sound really corny here, but every time I go on the bike on a drive above the cloud line on that exact road in Tenerife with Monica, every time I'd say it's just the road that makes you the most happy and lucky to be alive. It's an incredible sensation. And doing it on the likes of a Triumph Bonneville T120, it just adds to it. And Nico, you've inspired me here. Where have I saved this? I've got a good one. Everyone, get your wallets ready because I found a Triumph Bonneville T120. I was taking a look. What are the prices like now? These have always been £6,500 plus on the used market. They're really desirable bikes. And bear in mind, when I bought my Bonneville 5 or 6 years ago, pretty much £4,000 was the cheapest you could get one of these for, or a Bonneville 865, my old one, for. So I never considered a Bonneville T120. It was way out of my price range. Can you believe it? Stop everything you're doing right now. You can now, and it's not difficult to find them, you can now get a Triumph Bonneville T120, the ultimate Bonneville. And it breaks my heart to say it, but the level Triumph has stepped up from my Bonneville to this T120, it's not evolution, it's revolution. They've kept all of the style, all of the character, but it is just my bike. 80% better in every way. It's an incredible, incredible bike. I would never sell my bike because I love it so much. It's that emotive element, all of the history we've got with it. But I won't pretend for one moment this isn't a far better bike. These are sensational. Under £5,000. Under £5,000 for one of these. Here's the one I found. This is even from a dealer. 5 out of 5 star rated dealer. £4,999. For me personally, the best color combo in one of these. It's the silver and red. Oh, it's stunning. 31,000 miles on the clock, 2016 model, one owner from new. Very good condition, comprehensive service history, loads of extras, full service history, it says, original stamp service book, services done, X, Y, Z, yada, yada, Triumph heated grips, genuine Triumph, brown seat, That is so tempting. $5,000 for one of those.
Nico Lara, delighted to hear from you. Moving on. Jim, over in the USA. Progress?
Freddie, let's go back 48 years to when I bought a 1977 Yamaha SX360C. Just like the one pictured here. Jim, thanks for sending pics. I had it for more than a decade and did not have a single problem with it in that time. If I had it now, I would be so happy. How does it stack up, though, to the current crop of popular 350cc bikes?
Take a look at my comparison chart. Oh, Jim, thank you for doing this. I'll put up this comparison chart now as I read it out. If the names of the bikes were covered up, which bike would you select?
Have we progressed after all these years? In some ways, yes, of course we have, but in many ways, no, not in my mind. Jim, I'll just, first of all, I love that original advertising brochure, but I'll just get this chart up that you've kindly sent over. Comparing it to all of the big players, all of them. The Bantam from BSA, the Honda, the Royal Enfield. So this old 1977 bike, which makes it 48 years old. Same engine size. It's air-cooled just like the Honda and the Royal Enfield. It's got more horsepower than all of the others by quite a considerable margin. It's got a 6-speed gearbox. I didn't know they were doing 6-speed. God, Jim, is that true? I have to take your word for it. That's incredible. The weight is 388 pounds, which is noticeably lighter than all of the others. So it's the lightest. It's the fastest. It's got a 6-speed gearbox, which only two of the others have. And it's also got a top speed faster than the Enfield and the Honda. And I know also faster than the BSA.
Okay, fine, Jim. I don't have an argument to this. This is incredible. On paper, yes, that Yamaha is better in every single way.
So in essence, all we've ever needed to do, Jim, is keep those 1977 bikes and just make sure they are reliable. You don't need any kind of revolution here. Just make sure the reliability is on point. That's the only thing we ever need to improve. Make sure they start every single time. Make sure they don't rust when you simply look at it. They're properly rust protected. And there you go. We had the perfect recipe for these bikes all the way back in the 1970s. Jim, that's brilliant to see that. Thank you. Now, carrying on with that soft BSA theme there. A custom BSA scrambler. I did the review, the BSA Scrambler, 218 kilos, and I did remark, look, it's quite a heavy bike, and it's quite top heavy as well. But Chris may have the answer here. Freddie, after a long wait for the BSA Scrambler, I was looking forward to seeing how people thought when it finally met the road. You made some good points in the review. It is brutal, it's a bit Mad Max and a bit of a hooligan for sure. I know and understand the cons you point out. Yes, it is a bit heavy, and yes, built to a budget, and the handlebars push you forwards. Sadly, the EU laws don't help. But the answer, Paulson Customs in Malden. This is the place I did a video just 2 weeks ago or so. Paulson actually built my very bike. When I spoke to them about building a Scrambler BSA, I asked that not only should it look off-road ready, but it should also deliver the goods. And what a job they did. They dealt with the weight and removed the standard parts for more light and capable parts. And they also changed the handlebars. Come and give it a go for yourself. Chris, I think I'll probably have to take you up on this offer. This is a really good looking bike. Your one, Chris, and also looking at the one on Paulson's website. Fantastic looking Scrambler. £8,000 right now with all of the modifications on there, which is extremely good value because it's £6,000 for the BSA Scrambler out of the box. But with the amount of work that's gone into this, that is an excellent, excellent looking BSA Scrambler. I really like these. I hope now BSA is going to be pushed on a level in terms of respect. I want BSA to be right up there with the likes of Royal Enfield and Triumph. Can you imagine if we've got Royal Enfield, BSA and Triumph all battling it out. Level pegging, once again, I'd be over the moon. Chris, yours is an excellent looking bike and thank you for sharing it. Now, the problem with rare machines, those unicorns of bikes that many of us may lust after, that offer command very high premiums in the used markets. The kind of bikes that you really have to want, you have to actively go out of your way to try and find one.
Is the ownership experience heavenly, or is it actually hell? I got so many people commenting about this. I didn't really expect it, but I had to read out just a couple of them. This is from Paul. Freddie, having had several left field type bikes from the 1990s, purely for the novelty factor, they're great until you need parts. No joke, but I must have spent hundreds of hours looking for simple parts from air filters to indicators. The last straw for me was when I needed a replacement tank. No chance. In the end, I had to scrap it. In my opinion, it really isn't worth it. Trailing Arm 63 shares this. Kajiva may have been a big noise in Italy for a while, but it was only ever a very niche brand in the UK. I'm not sure what the point of buying something obscure is. It makes sourcing parts more difficult, albeit proprietary engines like the Ducati 900 or Suzuki 1000 V-twins will always be well catered for. I had the latter in my Suzuki SV1000 Naked and can confirm it's a great engine. This is a bike that has almost been forgotten about. Everyone knows about the SV650 because it's been around forever and it's still sold now, incredibly, as a brand new bike. But the SV1000, this is like the forgotten bigger brother that was only around for 4 years. Let's take a look at it because it deserves it. In fact, this was almost my bike of the week, and even now I'm thinking, should this have been my bike of the week? SV1000. 2003 to 2007, so just 5 years this was made for. Take a listen to the ingredients here. 1000cc V-twin engine. Sold. Done. 1000cc V-twin with 118 horsepower, 189 kilo weight. Aluminium frame. MCN rate at 5 out of 5 stars. Stop everything you're doing now and go and buy one. This is a 1000cc V-twin beast of a bike that is 189 kilos. You know, we always talk now how heavy bikes are getting. This is way under 200 kilos. I had to do a double check to make sure there wasn't a typo here, but it is that weight. Can you believe it? With an aluminium frame. Everything here sounds perfect. They did, interestingly, this bike with a fully fared version, so all the plastics on it. And they also did it in a naked version, completely with a circular headlamp. It's the naked version for me that's the real beauty. It's the one to have, just for my personal opinion. But they are so difficult to find now. In my eyes, these are more appealing. And if we bear in mind that these bikes, these were always, when they came out, budget-friendly 1000cc bikes. I couldn't find one of the naked ones on Facebook Marketplace. How has time been to them? Has time been a friend to the big Suzuki SV1000? I can tell you 100% it has. Because, first of all, I can only find 4 of the naked versions available. And the starting price for one of these, the cheapest you're going to get it, £2,500. These will comfortably go up to close to the £4,000 mark. So I'm looking here at a 2004, cheapest one I can find, SV1000. So it's 21 years old with 20,000 miles on the clock in silver. I think it's aged really, really well. Look at that aluminium frame. That classic, pretty gigantic exhaust on the back, but that front view is really nice with that circular headlamp. V-twin naked bike with 118 horsepower. I really like these. And again, hold the value so well. You buy it now, £2,500. That's never losing a penny. And I'll move on to bike of the week now. In a similar vein, Japanese bike from a similar-ish time. Don't know if you heard that. That's Monica smashing around all over the place, desperately packing away as I'm reading this out. I'm so sorry for that. Bike of the week from Michael. Freddie, definitely an exciting time in the 350 to 450 A2 segment of the market regarding good-looking, affordable bikes. That big Honda Retro CB1100, it looks amazing, but it's just too heavy. The old 900cc Honda Hornet
is an excellent alternative if you can forget about having a retro style, although it is sort of retro in design, and it is 25 years old now. Michael, well done. Bike of the week. Let's take a look. The, again, often forgotten Honda CB900 Hornet, built from 2001 to 2007. 194 kilos. See, again, it's another big engine, sub 200 kilo bike. 110 horsepower. And again, listen to this for a set of ingredients to excite, just like that big Suzuki. This is a 919cc Honda Fireblade engine. Not just that, Honda decided to take the ultimate engine, the Fireblade engine, and squeeze it into the Honda CB600 frame. So you take the biggest beast of a bike that Honda have, the ultimate power machine, and you squeeze it into a little 600cc frame. This all sounds incredible, but despite all of that performance that you'd expect, you still get the everyday usability. This is designed to be a bike that both excites with the Fireblade engine, yet you can use it as the daily grind, the commuter, the winter slog. It's a proper parts bin special with this. Let's just take that CB frame, let's take the Fireblade engine, let's just squeeze this in there, and there you go. You've got a naked mix of the two machines. But Honda messed it up. Instead of being a really exciting naked bike, it ended up being a bland, forgettable machine. At least that's what the motoring journalists of the time, when it came out, thought of the bike. This did not get rave reviews. Uninteresting, bland, and something that should have got your heart racing, but never did. But just like that Suzuki SV1000, has time been a friend to the 900 Hornet? So it may be a detuned version of the engine, and that took away some of the excitement from the Fireblade engine. But look at what it's got now if we look back. It's got those lovely classic looks that maybe were termed as bland 20 years ago. But I think, certainly from a looks point of view as well, time has been a friend to this bike. So we know it's got, from the reviews of the time, good handling, superb engine, classic looks, simple technology, of course. This was before anything such as ABS or anything. And you've got that rock solid, proven reliability. It ticks every single box. But because of all of these good points, this really has turned out to be quite a desirable bike. Some of these go for almost crazily huge money. They'll go all the way up to £4,000. And when you bear in mind that they stopped selling these 18 years ago, and these weren't an especially expensive bike when they came out. These weren't the most premium, top-level dream machine on your bedroom wall bikes. Yet there's still some of them commanding £4,000. And the problem is, because they were out between 2001 and 2007, it's the exact time when everyone was doing a lot of really ugly mods to their bikes. Fairly ropey looking exhausts and those Renthal bars with that padding over the bar and stuff like that. So to find a standard one that hasn't been modified and had the looks ruined is fairly difficult. I found a couple here. For a good price. You can go all the way up again to £3,500, but let me quickly show you two of the ones I've found. 2000 model, £1,500, listed 25 days ago. This one has done 78,000 miles. Testament to Japanese, and more specifically Honda build quality, I wanted to show you this. 78,000 miles from a superbike engine. I think that's incredibly impressive. There you go, that's pretty much the cheapest you can get full stop, but that shows how well built these are. Spend a little bit more. I say a little bit more, actually a lot more. £2,600 gets you this very nice looking, what looks to be pretty standard, maybe apart from the exhaust. Hornet 900, 11 months MOT, new battery, twin blue flame exhausts. I'm not sure about those, but there you go. Good tires. Was my dad's bike before mine, so it's been in the family for a few years. Very good condition. Any inspection welcome. No rush to sell. so won't take silly offers, but that is a lovely looking bike and it's been in the same family for a while. I would probably be looking at something, if not like that, actually exactly like that, if I was in the market for that. £2,600, they hold the value really well. And I think from an aesthetics point of view and also engineering point of view, that's a bang on bike. And I'll wrap it up there. Thank you so much everyone for watching. Really hope you enjoyed it. I'll see you in the next one.